Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Dan Burke and the Register's senior editor, Joan Frawley Desmond, discuss Pope Francis and military options in Iraq. Also, Jeanette DeMello talks with Register writer Joseph Pronishin about the upcoming Register College Guide. And welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thank you for joining us. Our first guest today, Joan Frawley Desmond, is the Register's senior editor. Joan is an award-winning journalist, widely published in Catholic, ecumenical, and secular media. Joan is a graduate of the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies of Marriage and Family. She lives with her family in Menlo Park, California, in the San Francisco Archdiocese. Joan has been following the U.S. policy response to developments in Iraq.
Joan, this is such an important issue. So many are suffering. So many of us see the images on a day-to-day basis and are heartbroken about it. And certainly the most important thing we need to do is pray. But there's been an unusual development in this situation in Iraq and the suffering, and that's with Pope Francis and some recent comments that he's made. It might be a good idea to begin with what it is that he actually said about what's going on there and what we might be able to do about it.
Sure, Dan. The most important most recent comments Pope Francis made was on his flight back from Korea. He was on a flight to Italy, and he was asked in a kind of impromptu press conference about whether he was supporting U.S. military involvement in Iraq. And what he emphasized three points. He said it was important to stop unjust aggression. It was important to act collectively, so the international community should act collectively. And he also said it was important to protect innocent religious minorities who were being targeted by ISIS, the extremist Islamic group. So let me tell you what he actually said. I think it's an interesting point. He said, in these cases where there is an unjust aggression, I can only say that it is licit to stop the unjust aggressor. I underscore the word stop. He says, I don't say to bomb or make war, but stop it. So he's not precise about what that means, but he seems to be saying, he says here, the means with which it can be stopped should be evaluated to stop the unjust aggressor, but he said it's licit to do so. Then he also said it was important, if at all possible, to act collectively. And the reason why he said that is the Vatican traditionally always emphasizes the need for the UN or the international community to act. Some of that has to do with the charter of the UN, but it also has to do with some Christian realism, which is it's easy for a country to be self-justifying, to supposedly stop aggression. That has been used by Hitler. It was used by Stalin. So obviously the U.S. is not, you know, it's not Hitler and it's not Stalin, but that's the point. So he says one single nation cannot judge how to stop this. And that's why he says collective action is better.
Exactly. And he went on to say that he was concerned that if a single nation went to stop it, then it could easily slip into the situation where they become the oppressor.
Yes. So they're being very careful about that, and that is their position. And then, of course, a lot of concern about protecting religious minorities. The Holy Father is not the only one. Patriarch Sacco, the Chaldean patriarch, also has spoken out saying that that the international community, he said, needed to, quote, clear the Nineveh Plain. That's the area between where the jihadist forces and Kurdistan, which is now home to an estimated 1 million displaced Iraqi religious minorities. That's the area where a lot of the conflict is going on and where many Christians are being targeted. So Patriarch Sacco called for the international community to clear the area. And then also, besides the Holy Father, Archbishop Tomasi, the Pope's representative to the UN in Geneva, also clarified the importance of stopping unjust aggression, the fact that the Charter of the United Nations allows for this kind of collective action. And then he also made a further point, which I think is very important. He went back to talk about what happened in the Rwanda genocide when that started to escalate, and a lot of people died in that, and the international community talked, they discussed, they debated, nothing really happened, and, you know, a lot of people died.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're here with Senior Editor Joan Frawley-Desmond talking about the grave challenges in Iraq with ISIS aggression and the suffering of minorities, Christian and non-Christian. Now, he made a specific reference to Christian martyrs, but he made an important point, didn't he, Joan, that Christians shouldn't just be concerned about Christians in this crisis, but there's many others who are suffering.
Right. And I think it's worth noting here that the Holy Father and others have been very clear that the lives and the rights of all religious minorities need to be taken into account, and that has always been one of the Church's primary missions, is to defend fundamental dignity of all persons, irrespective of creed, ethnicity, or origin.
Specifically, he said, but here there are men and women, religious minorities, not all of them are Christian, but all of them are equal in God's eyes, which is, of course, a beautiful sentiment that all are worthy of our concern and care and action. Now, you mentioned a bit about Rwanda, and there was obviously some concern regarding being too slow to deal with that crisis.
Well, I think the problem today, and it's maybe even more so today because we have so many crises. I mean, look at our global situation. We have Ukraine. We have the situation in Gaza. We have Iraq. We have Syria, as well as brewing conflicts elsewhere. And so it's easy to just kind of get paralyzed by it. And he's saying don't be paralyzed and don't allow the kind of the advance of evil to paralyze good people. You know, act on that. Come together. And again, he does prefer collective action through the auspices of the UN.
I, frankly, was a bit surprised at the Pope coming out beyond urging of international engagement, urging for peace, prayers for peace, that sort of thing. How does this compare to how the Vatican has handled these kinds of situations in the past?
Well, I think the most striking example is that Pope John Paul, both with the first Gulf War and then even more so with the second, the 2003 invasion of Iraq, which the Holy Father strongly denounced and opposed. And he mentioned he had good relations with President Bush. This was nothing. There was no hostility between the two. They worked together on many other issues. But on this issue, he warned of the consequences, including the consequence of fomenting religious war between Christians and the Islamic majority there. And unfortunately, some of the Holy Father's fears were realized because in the wake of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, the majority of Christians departed. I mean, the community was reduced by more than half. Much of this was just whenever you're in a situation of violence, bad people use the cover of violence and war to target vulnerable groups. Christians were targeted, and then as well as outright, you know, anti-Christian activity, both. And now that has taken on a new level of momentum with these Islamic militants actually more consciously targeting religious minorities.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're here with Senior Editor Joan Frawley-Desmond talking about the tragic situation with ISIS, a militant Islam aggression against Christian and other minorities in Iraq. So, Joan, why is it that it seems that the general population of Iraqis, in some cases, is reported to help ISIS? Why isn't the Iraqi population rising up? So it seems.
Right. Well, I think it's a complex situation. I don't understand all of it, but here's what I can tell you. The Iraqi government and its military has virtually no power in northern Iraq. So when ISIS arrived and ultimately took over Iraq's second largest city, Mosul, which is a home to a lot of Christians, tens of thousands of Christians, there was virtually no Iraqi government response to military action in that area. Why didn't that happen? I've heard a lot of arguments, and I don't pretend to be an expert, but I do know that they were trained to deal with a certain level of ground activity, but they were in disarray. Secondly, the whole strategy was supposed to have additional support of U.S.-provided aircraft. That never came together. But there are other issues going on in Iraq right now. It was politically a tough time. The Obama administration said, basically, we're tired of trying to act on your behalf. If you want to be a full-fledged country, you know, we're not going to help you until you show that you're going to take your part. Well, a focus of the Obama administration was the development of a so-called unity government. That was going to be a multi-sectarian government with a new prime minister. Basically, the old prime minister had lost any support because he favored Shiites, which is what he was, and he penalized or basically sidelined Sunnis. And that created problems with the Sunni in Iraq essentially either supporting or tacitly permitting the jihadists to advance in some cases, and the Shiites trying to oppose them, but not having adequate resources for that to happen.
Prior to the first military action by the United States in Iraq, one of the strong arguments, I thought, was that tribalism would undermine any efforts at democracy. It seems to be the case, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the Prime Minister Maliki put in power, or at least supported in power by the last two administrations, for better or for worse, proved to not be a leader who would support all the people of Iraq. So basically, the Obama administration said, we're not going to provide additional support until there's a new prime minister, a new unity government. The unity government was essentially in place, but the process of identifying the new prime minister has only just happened very, very recently. So the government wasn't really in place for the U.S. to say, okay, we now have someone who we support and we can act in concert with. That left the Kurds, who have provided most of the safe haven for displaced Christians. As I said, 1 million Christians and counting, plus many other targeted religious minorities. They have done a lot. And actually, the Pope made a point in his press conference on the plane to say he had met personally, which I was quite interested, or so it seemed to be a personal meeting, with the governor of Kurdistan to say, basically, with the governor saying, we can't take any more Christians. We need to find another place for these Christians. Patriarch Sako pleaded with support. He said there are displaced Christians sitting on park benches in the Kurdistan area, dying in the parks.
Well, one of the major efforts underway that EWTN and the Knights of Columbus is supporting is a very large fund to help mitigate the plight of refugees in this situation. Folks can find out about that at ncregister.com. And of course, prayer is in order for all Christians, for those suffering. My family and I have taken up a daily prayer for our brothers and sisters and all that are suffering in our rosary time. But please visit ncregister.com and click on the banner near the top of the page that will lead you to a way that you can help mitigate this crisis. So Joan, thanks again for being with us and getting us up to speed on all that's happening in this case.
It's a pleasure, Dan.
When we return, are your kids heading to college next fall? You starting to think about colleges? We're going to talk with Joseph Pronishin about the upcoming Register College Guide, so you won't want to miss this one. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, Provider and Protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Joseph Pronishin, has been a Register staff writer since 2005. His articles have appeared regularly in a number of national publications, including Columbia Magazine, Faith and Family, Catholic Digest, and Marian Helper. His religion features have also appeared in Fairfield County Catholic and in one of Connecticut's largest news dailies. He holds a Bachelor of Science and a Master of Science degree and formerly taught English in courses in film study that he developed at a Catholic high school in Connecticut. And for 10 years now, Joseph has written the Register's College Guide that is published every September.
Well, Joseph, it's always good to be talking to you, especially good when we can talk face-to-face, and we're in the studio together right now, and that's a great pleasure. We're here to talk about the College Guide. Can you tell us what the College Guide is?
Yes, the College Guide that we do annually for the Register, and by the way, this is the 10th anniversary, takes the best of the Catholic colleges, or brings the best of the Catholic colleges to our readership or to anyone who looks at our website. We want to connect those colleges faithful to the magisterium with excellent educational possibilities besides to our readers so they know where they are and where they can go.
Now, there's a whole list of requirements in order to be in this college guide. So tell us how people get into the guide and so that people know what our requirements are.
Okay. We ask colleges to answer 10 basic questions. They're all, again, tied into the faithfulness of teachings to the church. For instance, we ask, does the president take an oath of fidelity? Is there a Catholic board? Is the faculty mostly Catholic? Do theologians have to take an oath? Is the college faithful to ex corde ecclesia? Do they watch the speakers? Are the speakers those that are faithful to the church, or do they allow speakers that may vote, for example, for liberalized abortion, for example? Are there any objectionable clubs allowed? Are there dorms co-ed or not? And is Mass and confession available daily?
That's
for
right.
The students.
Well, that's an important part, too, is just showing the spiritual life of the campus. So it's not just a list of kind of negatives, do you do this or don't do that, but it really helps to show what kind of Catholic things the student body is offered, so the spiritual aspects as well. So that's a very important part, that last thing that you said.
And everything is framed in a positive way and not a negative way.
Yeah, that's really important. So we list in the college guide the sample questions so that they can see the questionnaire that our colleges have answered.
Yes.
And there are 38 colleges this year. Is that correct?
That's correct. And this is the most ever we've had. We've had some new additions this year.
That's great. And so we've been doing this for 10 years. What is the issue date this year?
The issue date is September 7th.
Okay.
And after that, the College Guide is available daily on our website under resources. But I suggest that all our listeners get that print edition. They'll have it at hand all the time, anytime.
Yeah. It's a good thing to pass along, too. Mm-hmm. So this is Jeanette DeMello. I'm talking to Joseph Pronishin, staff writer for the Register, and we're talking about the Register's College Guide. Now, one thing you mentioned was that we have some new colleges this year. Can you tell me about one of those new colleges?
Yes, one of the new colleges is quite exciting to have up here. It's Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas. They have an enrollment of 700 students, and they want to continue the mission of Jesus Christ in our time by making, the love of God available to especially those who might not otherwise be served. And one major development they have is that Monsignor Stuart Swetland, who was rector at Mount St. Mary's University in Maryland, has now become their new president.
Yeah, that's a huge development. I think that's a really good thing. You know, Monsignor Swetland writes for the Register sometimes, and he is frequently is one of our sources and stories, especially on ethical things, because that's his expertise. So we really look forward to what he's going to do at Donnelly College. But in this issue, Amy Smith did a question and answer with Monsignor Swetland and talking about the college. And one of the things that really struck me is Monsignor Swetland thinks that this is really a part of Pope Francis's mission, that he's really following Pope Francis as he takes the lead of Donnelly College. And that's because Pope Francis has asked us to serve those on the margins. And Donnelly College has 71% of those students are from a lower socioeconomic bracket. And so they're really serving a population that Monsignor Swetland has said they want to offer the intellectual Catholic tradition. And this is what they're doing, is offering that to 71% of their students who are at a lower economic rung. Yeah. And the other thing that struck me is 55% of that student body is Catholic. So there's a large non-Catholic population at that school that Monsignor is reaching out to. So we have a great Q&A with Monsignor that's going to be in this college guide issue of the Register. So I hope our readers really enjoy that. And one of the things that Monsignor said in his interview was that education should really educate the entire person, that it's not just about training, but really for the entire person. And you wrote a story in this issue that's about liberal arts education. Tell us a little bit about what you wrote.
Yes, that article on liberal arts education focused on some colleges that specifically grant liberal arts degrees. I talked to some college presidents on that. And, for example, there's another O'Donnell over here, and not to be confused with Donnelly College, but one of the presidents at the college just said that Pope Francis and his predecessors clarify that education is for this higher purpose over here. It's not just to train man as a worker, but it's to have him recognize he has an immortal soul and an eternal destiny. And that's for anybody, you know, at the college. And we get too specialized in colleges sometimes, sure. And we look at the secular aspects of education, what it can do for me, maybe with a salary, what it can do for me in whatever area I want to specialize in. But the most important thing, the primary thing, is that part of the immortal soul and the eternal destiny.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Joseph Pronishin, a staff writer for the Register, and we're talking about the Register's College Guide. Now, Joe, you mentioned liberal arts education. I graduated from Franciscan University. I have a liberal arts degree from that school. I know that they're in our college guide, so it's really great to see them there. But there's also another college, St. Mary's, who has something new going on, and I would like to focus on them a little bit. What's going on at St. Mary's?
Well, St. Mary's in Bismarck, North Dakota, has come up through the ranks tremendously since Monsignor James Shea has taken over as president a few years ago. And one of the biggest things that's going on is that they're offering a new degree over here, a Master of Science with an emphasis on bioethics. So this is going to be a Master of Science in bioethics, and it is the first such degree to be granted in the United States to a Catholic college. So there was one other college that grants a Master of Arts degree in bioethics, but those are the only two.
And what college is that?
That's Holy Apostles College and Seminary in Cromwell, Connecticut.
Okay, we do a lot of work with them too, so mm-hmm. It's nice to talk about them. Mm-hmm. Now, this bioethics degree is done in conjunction with the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Is that right?
That's correct, and that's what makes it so unique, because this is the leading bioethics center in the United States, I think we can say. This will certainly bring an entirely new Catholic dimension to all medical work, nursing work across the board.
So let me see. So if someone is already a nurse and they're working in a hospital, whether it be a Catholic hospital or not, this would enable them to go to school and to find out how to integrate Catholic ethics into their work?
Exactly. That's okay. What it would do.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a very interesting degree. I look forward to following what these people go on to do. Maybe we can interview some of the students who have finished the program in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. Is there anything else you should tell us about the college guide, anything that jumps out at you in the research you did on these colleges?
Yes, I think beside being faithfully a Catholic, all these colleges, they have some wonderful programs on their own. Like, for example, one of the colleges in New Hampshire, one of the smaller colleges, Thomas, it's a liberal arts college, by the way, the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire, has wonderful programs. Like they integrate carpentry, woodworking.
Really?
They integrate the choral music into their program, okay. too. So all students have choices to take that as they're studying the great
sure.
books, as they're studying the great liberal arts.
Oh, that's awesome. And then mm-hmm. I think your liberal arts article also talks about Christendom College, of course.
Yes.
It's one of the leading ones in that area.
Yes.
And let's see. So what about what is one of the smallest colleges in the College Guide?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. One of the smallest colleges in the College Guide is Holy Spirit College in Atlanta, Georgia. It's got less than 10 students, I believe.
Oh,
it's
my goodness.
And the bishop has come out to say Mass there. Or the archbishop, I'm sorry, has come out to say Mass there at the college. But they have a new certification program this year that has 28 participants in it.
Okay.
So it is growing, and you have to give them credit. Here's a college that started very small, and it actually has increased already.
Right. Right. It's really awesome to be able to offer a picture of all of the good works that are going on in education, and highlight even some of these smallest colleges, because you've got bigger ones. I mean, you've got Franciscan University, you've got the ones that are well known, like Franciscan or Christendom. or Thomas Aquinas College out on the West Coast. So you've got these, but then you've got these very small colleges, I think that deserve mention, because there's a community there that's really putting a lot of work into educating the whole person and thinking of souls as they do it. So I really like to highlight that.
Exactly.
And before we finish, I think you mentioned something that's really awesome about two of these colleges, and they were founded by a saint. So tell us about those.
Yes, exactly. St. John Paul II actually was founded the Pontifical Institute, I should say, the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies on Marriage and the Family at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is the International Theological Institute, or also called the School of Catholic Theology in Trammen, Austria, which is near Vienna. And this was founded at the direct request of St. John Paul II, and the degrees are granted by the Holy See. And once again, they specialize in marriage and the family.
Yeah, and it's how important is that for us today, where there's so many assaults on marriage and family? It's very important for us to have universities and institutes like this that focus on teaching students how to promote true marriage and the good of the family.
Exactly.
So, Joe, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Jeanette. It's
always
been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's always good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll have you on again.
I look forward to our next visit.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. And thanks again for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.